From Cambridge 105, this is Election Studio.
Welcome back to the Election Studio. Julie Howell is leader of Peterborough Green Party and runs a communications business. She's living with MS and says if she's elected, she'll champion the rights of the disabled. Her MS meant she was unable to come to our studios, so her place is taken by Jeremy Caddick, who's also stood in for her at a number of local hustings. Jeremy, thank you very much for speaking to Cambridge 105 and our Election Studio programme. It's a bit different, of course, because the Green candidate for the mayoral election is Julie Howell. She's living with MS, of course, and my understanding that sometimes means she's a little bit out of action. And I wonder, a media interview is one thing, but what happens if she becomes mayor and has to step aside from an important meeting at some point? What happens then?
Well, I think one of the positive things about Julie being open about her health status is that she provides an example for all the people there are in the region who live with health difficulties. In our today's fast-paced society, everybody pretending to be superwoman or superman is not actually the most healthy way of doing things. So actually, Julie would lead by example. Certainly, all the important meetings would be covered, but providing an example of how somebody who lives with a long-term medical condition can lead a region is one of her selling points.
But the tricky thing, surely, is, just to think of an example here, if it was a national political post, the scrutiny would be so much more than something which is just on a regional basis. And maybe over time, that scrutiny would evolve anyway. The questions would be asked, and these things can act as an undercurrent.
They can. Electing Julie would send a very strong signal about what sort of region this is, and the fact that it wasn't, if you like, a monarchical system. I mean, that's one of the Greens' problems with the position of mayor, just choosing one person, says some slightly alarming things about the nature of our community and the nature of democracy. So electing Julie would send a very strong signal that this is a region where there are lots of people who are involved. This is a team effort. And if Cambridgeshire and Peterborough is linked with Julie Howell, who will use a variety of people to speak for her, that actually what the national media or national politics will be engaging in would be our region at a deeper level.
Of course, the Greens as a party actually have two national leaders at this time, don't they? Which has Julie chosen a running mate? It's an awful American political term, but I noticed that both Kevin Price and also Peter Dore have named people who will be their so-called deputies, even though there's neither the post nor the salary and the instructions.
Well, one of the things that Julie has said she will do is there's the authority, which is made up of the leaders of the councils involved, but to get to hear the voice of the people who live in the region more directly, she will set up an assembly, like the London Assembly, to hear the voice of people who live in the region. So absolutely, that will be, you know, a whole group of people.
How would that assembly work? Would there be people elected to that as well, or would they be representatives drawn maybe from the councillors who are already elected, arguably, to do just that job?
I think the details of that are still to be worked out.
Only got a couple of weeks until the election. They might need to be worked out rather quickly.
Well, the authority has already started working. You might say that actually this is an enterprise that is being made up as people go along. Whoever is elected as mayor will inevitably be playing catch up to some extent, because the transitional authority has already been working and has already...
Yes, he's worked both as a shadow authority, hasn't he? And exactly. I think actually as a non-shadow authority, it's already had at least one meeting on that. How difficult was it to get the campaign going? I noticed that Julie had a crowdfunder campaign running to raise the £5,000 needed as a deposit.
Well, that was very successful. She raised the money necessary for the deposit. The Greens don't have the resources that some of the other parties have, and therefore things like raising a substantial amount of money, such as £5,000, is something that needs doing. But when Julie started the crowdfunder, actually everybody rallied round. We raised the money really quite quickly.
And now I noticed after another 2,000, I think it is, in order to get some of the other things that campaigns arguably need quite a bit of, the travel costs, it's quite a large area, the printing is, as you mentioned, general publicity materials as well. So you're confident then of raising another tranche, as it were?
Yes, I think once things get going, momentum builds, people get enthusiastic. Talking to Green Party members and supporters, actually the momentum is strong and growing.
But it seems a bit late in the day, really, to be doing this. The campaign, we're already a couple of weeks into the so-called electoral purdah, right. which has put upon people. I've got... I haven't got that many leaflets through my letterbox, actually, which I find strange. Yeah, it's both a blessing and a curse. But one might expect in the next few days a few more, I guess the Greens wouldn't necessarily approve of lots of paper going through someone's letterbox, but it's still the best way to let people know what the policies are.
I know that in the next week or 10 days, there is a region-wide leaflet that's coming out from the Greens about Julie and about all the other candidates that are standing for the county council election.
With regards to the funding then, is it like the demographic makeup of the Greens? Does that put the party at a disadvantage? I noticed particularly in Cambridge you seem to have a lot of young supporters and young people, I guess, by their very nature, don't necessarily have the money built up that their parents might. And maybe there's other factors too.
I think that's true. My experience of the party is that actually there's quite a range of age. The Greens are used to running things, if not on a shoestring, then at least efficiently, shall we say? But I think the one of the good things about having Julie as our candidate is that people comment on how Cambridge and Peterborough are very different places, and Julie is based in Peterborough, and it's quite clear that being a Green in Peterborough is very different from being a Green in Cambridge, so Julie's profile in Peterborough is built on lots of face-to-face community work, looking after the local environment, picking up litter, those sorts of things, because those are the issues that people in Peterborough are concerned about, and that those are the sorts of things that convey the credibility of the Green Party in Peterborough, whereas perhaps the things that would convey our credibility in Cambridge are rather different.
For the Greens, is it about the winning, or is it almost just as much about the taking part, getting that conversation going and making both public and fellow candidates realise the importance of those policies, which nationally quite often, if it's a half-decent policy, the Greens will suffer from having it pinched by one of the so-called major parties.
Absolutely. Of course it's about winning in the sense that a political party exists to fight and to win elections. But the dynamic that you've just outlined happens repeatedly, that the Greens outline something and then another party will take it over. And I mean, I've taken part in this campaign. I've heard other candidates come out with ideas, for example, about electric buses that I said the meeting before. So the Green contribution to this campaign is to focus on issues of sustainability. And yes, it is inevitable that other parties will take up the issue of sustainability. In the end, it's good that sustainability is on the agenda. One of the things that has struck me is the way in which in recent years issues of sustainability and the environment and climate change have moved perhaps from the fringes to being central. So actually the issues that the Greens have been concerned about for always are now the issues that other parties are taking on board. And to be slightly mischievous about it, one could say if Green policies are what you want, then don't get them second hand.
Let's talk about some of those policies now, shall we? And it kind of goes without saying, really, that the Greens would be in favour of a Cambridge Clean Air Zone.
Indeed.
Would you also be in favour of a congestion charge for Cambridge?
Broadly speaking, yes. Some sort of control of congestion is necessary. But the Green thinking, I mean, and the Greens were talking about a congestion charge years before other parties were doing so. Our thinking has moved on as the technology has developed. So the top of our list for investigating what to do would be some sort of road pricing scheme, which is a more elaborate, more sensitive congestion charge. The idea being that if you have number plate recognition technology, you can price.
Sort of technology, of course, if one drives into London, we'll get you straight away if you haven't registered for their congestion charge.
And you can, if you have a system that's set up to do that, you can price different roads at different times, differently for different users, different sorts of car, those sorts of things. So that technology, that system would give you the maximum flexibility about addressing congestion. But congestion has been a problem. I mean, it's good now that people are talking about it, but it has been an issue that we should have been talking about for years.
It seems straight. The city deal here, of course, ruled out a congestion charge, but now it seems to be sort of back in. Mm. It's not being described as a congestion charge. It seems to be more of a let's get rid of those diesel vehicles off our roads charged.
Well,
and very much an all or nothing thing, as opposed to what you're putting forward here, a very sophisticated scheme. I think we know through London that the technology works. The implication of what you're saying is that everybody would have to pay something were they to drive in Cambridge.
Not necessarily everybody. I mean, there may be times or roads where the price will be zero, but
if you have to go in at a particular time on business, you know,
then
if
you have to pay.
If you have a sick dog to go to the vets, then
absolutely.
And the appointment's
absolutely.
At 11, you'll be paying, won't you?
You pay, yeah. Mm. So the road closures that the city deal was suggesting last year, that was the major disadvantage. You know, if you have a dog that needs to go to the vet, you just can't take them. Whereas if there's a road pricing system, you can make the choice. You know, it will cost me a significant amount of money, but it's worth it because the dog needs to get to the vet. As far as the diesels and the clean air area, all the debate has been about diesel cars, which are actually a tiny fraction of the problem. There was a report produced by the Director of Public Health for the county last month that said that there are 250 excess deaths across the county caused by air pollution each year. And in urban areas, the majority of that air pollution is caused by buses. So, and the majority of diesels in the centre of town are buses. So talking about congestion charge or road closure or whatever, as all part of a system to get people out of their cars onto buses, which is fine as far
quick,
as it goes.
Quickly, before we move to the buses, I'm wondering what sort of charge it would be. Obviously, the kind of multifaceted thing you describe would be different levels.
Yes.
What sort of range would we be looking at from top to bottom?
I think, off the top of my head, I think it would have to start at quite a low level so people got used to the idea. As the system developed and it became apparent what sorts of levels would have the effects and the outcomes that you were aiming for, then obviously you have to pay for the infrastructure first, but after that, then the object is to generate money that can be used to subsidise public transport. It can't just be a stick approach. You need a carrot in the form of accessible and usable public transport.
Okay, well, let's talk about that public transport then. An electric bus fleet sounds like a pretty good idea. That, mm-hmm. That would be, you would support that?
Or? Absolutely. And it is the obvious answer to this problem of diesel fumes in the centre of Cambridge is electric or hybrid buses. This is a route that London is going down. There are two routes that are already completely electric. Transport for London say that their target is to make all of central London free of diesel buses by 2020. The reason they can do that is because of the powers that Transport for London have. The bus services bill that's currently going through Parliament will give the mayor the power to franchise bus routes and to specify emission targets and so forth. And Julie, if elected, would absolutely, on day one, would start on that process.
Because the mayor of Cambridgeshire and Peterborough would also get those sorts of powers for the local area. But you're not going to be able to change these buses overnight because simply the logistics as much as anything else. And I noticed that Andy Campbell, as you'll know, is the boss of Stagecoach, has said mm-hmm. technology isn't there yet. Can't be done.
It is. To use a famous quote, he would say that, wouldn't he? The technology is there. We can see from London that it works. I mean, he has worries about charging points and electricity supply and so forth, and clearly those need to be addressed. But his answer to these worries about diesel fumes in the centre of Cambridge is that Stagecoach's new park and ride buses have a facility that turns off the engines when they stop. Two problems with that. First, this report from the Director of Public Health that I was talking about talked about previous efforts at so-called clean diesel engines and what theoretically delivered very large improvements. The conclusion of that report was that they made almost no difference at all. And secondly, anecdotal evidence is that the drivers of these buses don't like the engines going off, so they simply hit the override, so the engines restart almost instantly. So my problem with that is that these buses, these supposedly clean buses, won't actually affect the situation. The take-home message is there is no such thing as a clean diesel bus.
So you need a bus, presumably an electric bus, which does the whole thing and it cuts the manual override out of the equation, really.
Yes, exactly.
If Stagecoach didn't want to go along with it, or maybe even as a general point of principle, I think the rules allow the mayor to start their own bus company if they wanted to. Mm. Would that be something that the Greens would be looking to do?
In principle, yes. Julie would really do everything it takes to get our communities moving, and with community support, if setting up a separate company to challenge the established companies was what it took, then absolutely that's what she'd do.
Would that extend to other forms of transport? I know some of the other candidates have talked about light rail, and I noticed Mr. Dore, when he was in here last week, even suggested a cable car, which could be used to get people from Cambridge Station into the railway station, into the centre of town, and perhaps even to their nearest local radio station as well.
Right. Well, technology is a wonderful thing, and in this region we know that particularly, but
the Emirates cable car does a nice little job across the Thames to North Greenwich. You could imagine a similar scheme over Cambridge, surely.
I'm not sure that I would go for a cable car. My point is about technology is that technology is useful, but not every question has a technological answer. As far as light rail goes, yes, the Greens think that would be a logical next step. It would clearly involve, if we're talking about the centre of Cambridge, tunnels and things like that. So the cost,
which there could be an environmental issue in doing so,
there could be, but in principle, Greens would be in favour of that sort of solution because it would run on electricity, it would save people driving in and that sort of thing. It would take a lot of money and a lot of time, and so as far as the immediate choice on the 4th of May goes, it's about what we do now, and absolutely Julie would be committing herself and her energies to getting to a place where we do have light rail or something like it in the future. Perhaps not a cable car.
Okay, we'll talk about housing maybe in a moment or two, but we're asking all of our candidates, or in your case, our candidate's representative, to go through five sort of quick-fire questions for us. They're kind of yes or no answers. I know that in politics, a yes or no answer is not necessarily always what the interviewer might receive, but it gives us, hopefully, a general view of the candidates and the party's thinking. Brexit, yes or no?
No. The Greens oppose Brexit. Cambridge, particularly, is a very diverse community. We depend on people from European countries. So the Green Party will fight to maintain free movement. I mean, that's true across the region. We depend on people from other countries.
Okay, train, car, bus, or bike? It's not necessarily multiple choice. You can pick more than one.
I was going to say, I think I use, for myself, I use all of those, and all of those are necessary. Clearly, from a Green point of view, expanding bike travel and walking is, where possible, is a particular priority. It's, expanding rail, so laying new lines and that sort of thing, is a very efficient solution to a lot of transport problems.
Cash, credit card, contactless.
For myself, I've noticed over the last few months that I've been using contactless more and more. It's a very efficient way of doing things.
Housing or green fields?
Well, Greens would have to say both, despite their attachment to green fields. I think maintaining green fields is clearly central to the green vision, and also maintaining people's appreciation of green fields and nature. People recognise the value of nature instinctively, but they need to be educated to do that.
And the weekend is for?
The weekend is for taking a deep breath for me.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's talk about housing now then. And of course you'll be aware there's the £170 million grant available for the allegedly affordable housing. How do you spend that and how quickly?
Clearly all the candidates will be talking about how it should be spent on housing that's as affordable as possible. As you said, the allegedly affordable, I mean, it's a label that is now almost meaningless. 80% of market value is still 80% of a ridiculously large amount of money.
So maybe we turn the question around and say, you know, it's £170 million grant for properties for people to live in, regardless of whether they're sold, rented, leased or whatever. We just, people need homes. That's straightforward.
They do. The Green take particularly is that it's really important that these are built to very high environmental standards, because so ideally zero carbon. One of the government back in 2006 committed itself to requiring all new houses to be zero carbon by 2016, i.e. last year. The current government quietly dropped that. This is part of the government's legal obligations to have all homes zero carbon by 2050. Now, the homes that are being built now will still be occupied, we hope, anyway, by 2050. So actually, this is a deeply short-sighted measure. So the particular thing that the Greens would bring is, in terms of building those houses, that they would be sustainable, which would then help people with fuel costs and things like that.
And do you need to put pressure on developers to make sure that that actually happens and
Absolutely.
That the houses are built within time? We all know, we see the stories that the developers promised that, and the other, and slowly over time, I'm not singling out anybody in particular, but it does happen. Things creep back and promises get eroded.
And developers are very good at avoiding their obligations, you know, building just under the limit for where they have to contribute 106.
So how do you stop them from doing that? You know, the nice little artworks we get out of the 106 money is very nice, but we need sustainable quality homes.
Well, you simply build it into the agreements right from the start. That
and when they come back later on and get a revised, I'm sure you take a look proposals, a little plan is made to put an extra 8 properties onto the development, and they can't do that now. What do you then do?
You have to make it clear that you're not afraid to walk away from the deal if necessary. It can be done. And building sustainable houses may be a burden for the developer, but for the people who live in the houses, that pays for itself because they pay out less in fuel costs and that sort of thing. So what you do is you make it clear that you're not afraid to walk away from the deal.
We had in our quickfire round, of course, the housing or green fields question. That's particularly pertinent, I would have thought, for the Green Party when we talk about building on land around Cambridge. I know that the Greens will be concerned. Organisations like Cambridge Past, Present and Future, Save the Ditton Fields, Stop Building on Bourne Airfield, all of the groups with rightful concerns about what could happen to the countryside. But many people who can't, it's a double problem. Sometimes people can afford a house, and they still can't get one.
Yes, indeed. And I think it is...
Do you think you'll have to give a little?
It is inevitable. I mean, we clearly need more houses in this region. But I think we don't have to give in to the concrete over the... All the Greenbelt lobby either. I think we can... Particularly, this comes back to transport. I mean, that if we have a sustainable transport system, we can transport people quickly so that they don't necessarily have to live near large centres like Cambridge.
So you would look to have a transport system flowing into Cambridge, be that through rail or these electric buses on the 7 routes into Cambridge, in order to do that, rather than more development in the city itself.
Yes, I think the one of the things that Julie is committed to doing is developing the economy of the whole region. And in particular, developing small and medium-sized businesses, because those sorts of business retain the money that people spend in the local economy. Low-carbon enterprises, such as solar energy and so forth, generate many more jobs and many more local jobs than large undertakings like, you know, building new house stations.
I think there's too many large businesses in Cambridge, or being encouraged to come to Cambridge and set up.
Well, I think our quality of life in the region will be enhanced by encouraging small and medium sized businesses, because that will take advantage of our rural resources. It will take advantage of the expertise of people in the region. And in terms of going back to what we were talking about earlier, in terms of travelling about, if our region is a network of smaller businesses spread out, then actually the pressure on developing centres like Cambridge is reduced.
Jeremy, we are out of time, unfortunately, but thank you very much for coming in. Our best to candidate Julie Howell, and thank you for coming in on her behalf today.
Thank you.